Do you ever feel like you're working in spaces that don't support you or want you to be less than to succeed? Well, you've come to the right place. Welcome to Embracing Your Voice podcast, a show for ambitious women of color who have created the impactful life and career they've always wanted while being unapologetically themselves. To live the life you want, sometimes you can't always follow their rules. You have to create your own. And on this show, you'll learn from the amazing women of color who've done just that, and how you can too. I'm your host, Atima Omara. Welcome to the show.
All right. Welcome back, listeners. I am excited to be joined today by my friend Danielle Moody, who is a cultural connoisseur, political junkie, and podcast extraordinaire. Danielle is a former and self-proclaimed recovering lobbyist turned media maven who has made a name for herself, never being shy about shaking things up and calling out BS where she sees it. She has been an unapologetic commentator about America's racism problem, among many things, when it comes to our nation's politics and policies. And she made waves on election night initially in 2016 when she called Donald Trump's win what the white supremacy's last stand, video clips of which went viral. Since then, she's made frequent appearances on MSNBC, CBC, PBS, and BBC, and has increased her media footprint with three podcasts that reach over 500,000 listeners through her flagship series, iHeartMedia's Woke AF Daily, and then The Daily Beast, The New Abnormal, that she co-hosts with fellow journalist Andy Levy, and Democracy-ish, which she co-hosts weekly with fellow Daily Beast columnist and author Wajahat Ali. She also writes for Zora, Vogue, Essence, and many others. So I'm so excited to have her here just talk more about her journey and really this concept behind how we do things kind of differently than what we planned in our life and career. So welcome to the show, Danielle.
Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. Well, I want to jump in a little bit. When I first thought about the concept of having you on, one thing that I've always been sort of impressed in looking at your career from afar is really like how you kept going and built something that didn't really have a blueprint. You know, you have like medical school, law school, these type of careers where you do a certain type of schooling, you do a certain amount of time of internships, fellowship, and you just kind of land a certain place. And, you know, podcasts are sort of this new thing. Even just sort of being a media commentator is not something that everybody ends up doing, especially coming into politics. So I'd love to start very much at the beginning for you and really who is Danielle Moody and what did you think you were going to be when you were growing up? Did you think you'd end up doing this or how did you end up kind of on this journey?
Well, thank you so much for having me. Very excited about your podcast and podcast journey. And so who is Danielle Moody? I mean, I think I ask myself that every day. I started out wanting to go to law school. When I was in undergrad, I got my degree in political science and initially wanted to go to law school and thought that that was going to be my path. But I decided not to and went instead and got my master's degree in early childhood education. And the reason for that is because throughout my life, I have seen and experienced myself how education, particularly a good quality public education, is the foundation for success, right? And we were taught that and it was kind of drilled into our heads. And of course, throughout time, college and pursuing that kind of degree has become economically unfeasible for many people. But for me, public education, K through 12, I thought if young people can have a robust education, then they can have more opportunities and access to whatever it is that they want to do. So that's the degree that I went into, knowing that I only wanted to be a classroom teacher for a few years because I really wanted to do education policy work. And I worked in Washington, D.C. at a public charter school, went and then worked on the Hill for Congresswoman Yvette Clark. when she had just entered Congress. So this is like a million moons ago. Through the CBC fellowship is how I got there, Congressional Black Caucuses fellowship program. And I really enjoyed working on education policy. I was working, you know, with helping to devise New York City's public education and kind of at this point of reform in the early 2000s, in the mid 2000s, I will say. And it was exciting, right, for me to be on Capitol Hill, to kind of be in that place where New York City at the time had 1.1 million kids that it represented. And so if you do things in New York City, it's most likely going to be replicated across the country. So it becomes like this national type of footprint. And so throughout my, you know, my time living in D.C., I was a lobbyist and worked for Mayor Bloomberg's Office of Federal Affairs and did education policy and lobbying for New York City specifically after I left the Hill, and then went into environmental education as we started having broader conversations about testing and taking away recess and taking away field trips and outside time because we started teaching to the test because of No Child Left Behind during the Bush years. And so how my career and kind of trajectory has kind of winded its way is that while I was working as a lobbyist, and I would move to like the National Wildlife Federation and do environmental lobbying there for education, at the same time, the fight for marriage equality was really heating up in the country. And I am a Black queer woman, child of immigrants, and at the time was looking to get married. And there was only 8 states that you could get married in the country at that time. And ended up recognizing the power of media, because initially when we started talking about marriage equality, it was, you know, white gay men that were having that conversation that were not invoking a lot of empathy. Meanwhile, a lot of the discriminatory LGBTQ policies that were coming out were adversely affecting LGBTQ people of color. So by virtue of where I was in Washington, D.C., I decided to really get into that conversation, that narrative. And that's how I entered into the media space. Folks started having me on. At that time, I had launched one of my very, very first early podcasts. And it was, I realized, I said, there are two things that shift hearts and minds, and that is policy and media. And, you know, and so for me, it became like this natural progression of really wanting to be active in spaces that, one, obviously affect my life, but also affect the lives of marginalized communities. So I worked in with my now ex-wife, but I'd worked with and started an initiative at the Center for American Progress that was looking at how anti-LGBTQ and discriminatory policies adversely affect Black people. And that was called the FIRE Initiative. It was a 4-year initiative funded by Arcus that we did put out reports and kind of, you know, wanted to delve more into that narrative. And then from there, for me, it was like media and having conversations about Democrats versus Republicans, democracy, it kind of expanded from there. And I just realized that like storytelling is incredibly powerful, and the ability to have a platform where you can educate the masses is really important to me. So while my career has been windy in terms of the path that it's taken to now being a full-time podcaster, to now being a full-time political commentator, is to me still about that root foundation of education. It's like the students have changed, but the message and the importance of education for me have been the thread that connects everything.
Yeah, no, one thing I have sort of appreciated is that impact as well, just coming, being a daughter of immigrants as well, and realizing how important, I used to just do writing. And then I realized, oh, it's really important to have folks who look like us discussing how politics and policy, you know, impact our communities, because they're certainly not centering us in any of the narratives. You know, the one thing you said that kind of also interested me was, like, I remember thinking you kind of really started off doing a lot of media. You initially had, you know, some independent shows. And then, you know, for somebody who's on that media trajectory, you always hear in the industry, oh, like, get that commentatorship, get, like, you know, a paid political analyst. Because for folks who are listening, you don't know, most of us, when we're on there, we're just commenting, we're asked to come on, and we're not getting paid to do it. So unless you see, like, MSNBC political analyst, CNN political commentator, most of us are not paid. But you finally, with your one of your shows, was able to get a contract, or at least work through SiriusXM. So that's like the brass ring, right? Like, you got that. But then it also didn't turn out the way you thought it would. And so, yeah, tell me more about that, because that, I know, that was an interesting journey. You know,
It's funny, because I think that when you initially get into media, right, the goal is always to land at one of the legacy networks and think that that is going to be your big break. And I say to anyone that is thinking about or is in media to really think about why you're doing it, right? Like, is it just for a paycheck? Is it because you have a point of view that you really want to relay? What happened with me and Sirius is that I was on SiriusXM with Woke AF, which is where my flagship show launched. And it launched in response to Donald Trump being elected president in 2016. And so while I was there started to be these constraints of what you're allowed to say and what you're allowed to talk about, because now you're tied to another entity. And I ended up parting ways with Sirius. I have no problem saying that they let me go, because I tweeted out that the CEOs were very major donors to Trump. Yeah. And this is public knowledge, right? Like, it's public. Anyone can look it up. And all I said was facts. And they did not like that. And they were just like, we're not going to renew. We're not interested anymore. And so we're shutting down your show. And I said, and so it was a really big lesson to me. And at the time, I will be honest, like, I was really upset and devastated because of the ability of this major corporate entity to be able to pull the plug and take the microphone away from me, because I dared to tell the truth. And so you have to be really cautious about what your goals are, because if you do get one of those really, you know, cushy positions, understand that if you step out of line, if you do not toe the line, you will be removed, right? And we've seen it time and time again with MSNBC commentators, with CNN commentators who are not, you know, right? Who are, who are largely also people of color, right? Yeah. That are not given the benefit of the doubt. So for me, it was a lesson learned in that, oh, okay, well, I'm not going to go anywhere where I can't own my voice and be able to speak my truth, and that you get to dictate what I say and when I say it. So if you want me, right, then you have to want, like, all of me and not just a part. So, you know, I went to an independent network. I went to DCP Entertainment, which is a Black owned company, really focused on progressive BIPOC voices. And they still remain my production company for both Woke AF and Democracy-ish, but Woke AF went to iHeartRadio and podcasts. And in that contract, I was able, because of my experience with Sirius, to ask really thoughtful questions and make sure that we were on the same page about what we wanted out of the show, so that I was never going to be put in a position, because I'm not somebody that's going to compromise my integrity or the truth in order to keep a job. Like, and that's me. And I don't call foul on anyone who does it. You know, who does choose to make the compromises, to each their own, but I'm just not the one.
Yeah. Not the one, the two, or the three.
Or the three.
Yeah. I think that's, like, one of the things that I have been impressed with, because some folks are like, man, I lost a check. I'm trying to make something happen here. And you were just like, all right, I'm gonna figure this out. Like, I'm gonna, because you converted that to your own independent podcast. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how quickly after that did you do that?
I mean, so I left iHeart, let's say, I'm trying to think of the timeline. I can't actually remember. I want to say that it was 2018, maybe. And I ended up starting a Patreon so that in the interim that my audience, you know, could still find me. And then I then went on with DCP, who was doing, you know, the production and putting up the show. And so it was only really a couple of months, to be honest. And again, there are hiccups and there are starts and, you know, stops that happen. But I think that I was really committed to being in a place that saw me and my full self and wanted to elevate the fullness of my voice. And so integrity for me is what the driver is. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be in place. It's also one of the reasons why I stopped, you know, when I got into the TV game, pursuing an MSNBC commentator to have that check mark and that label. And after several years of doing practice shows and auditioning for this, that, and the other thing, I stopped because they wanted the ability to tell you what you could and could not tweet, what you could and could not share on social media. So would you get paid? Sure. But how much is your voice and your truth really worth? Those are the questions that people need to ask themselves in media. And if again, no shade at all, if you were going into it because it is an income driver and all of those things, then great. But do know that there will be things that you have to compromise on. And for me, telling the truth is just not a place that I'm going to compromise. So while I go on the show, I am, again, an independent voice. I don't go on TV all the time anymore either, because unless I really trust the hosts and the conversations that they want to have, I just don't bother.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point, a place of power to kind of come into doing that. I remember something else you said, you know, and this is from also my experience. You said, you know, to me once that you got on there and sometimes you have like 5 to 7 minutes to say what you want to say. And you're like, I had a whole lot more I could have said and get to say.
Yeah.
And that was very also important to you, I think, also in sort of the decision to have your own show podcast, as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was 100% because 5 to 7 minutes is the segment time, right? But that's the host doing their introduction. When you really break it down, right, you get about 90 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, 90 seconds to make a point on sometimes really complex and complicated issues. So I also, the reason for Woke AF is because there was a lot shifting in the country, obviously, as we know, in 2016 and 2017 when Donald Trump was inaugurated. And I'm like, we need to have more nuanced conversations. And cable news does not offer the space and the time for nuance, right? You're going in for a hot take and then you're moving on. So I really wanted a place where, you know, friends and folks that I knew from, you know, academics, authors could have a space to really get into the nitty gritty of things and not just like a quit hot take.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing also I have found from sort of doing our work in sort of politics and advocacy and even media is that oftentimes, I think we've had this conversation before, you say you have to like toe a line, and that's your experience certainly with sort of serious, but also just into being accepted into like certain circles or invited to certain events, especially if you're in DC or New York, where sort of your access is another type of prestige you can kind of, mm-hmm. have. But you don't, you're, you know, very confident in doing it your own way and not falling into that and just feeling free to say, you know, what you're going to say. And I think that pressure is definitely very much on women of color. So how do you just always try to stay true to sort of like telling the story, but how have you had moments where you doubted that, or you've just been like, it'd be
of
easier?
Course.
Just, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Because you can see other people, you know, ascend in certain ways that you're just like, well, how come I didn't get the show and didn't do the thing? And so there is a lot of self-doubt. There is a lot of competition, right? But there is, again, this owning of who am I? What is my unique perspective? And what do I have to offer, right? And does that, and those that really, truly want your perspective and voice will follow you, right? And will listen to you. And I think that the best feedback that I get are from my audience members, right? Who are very faithful listeners of all of my shows and say that they've been, you know, they have felt guided through really dark times, that this political climate can make them feel utterly hopeless over the last several years. And so, you know, they tune in because it's an opportunity for them to feel in community with other people, with other like-minded people, so that they don't feel alone and crazy, right? Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's again asking, well, what is it that I'm truly trying to get out of this? Is it some type of fame for whatever that is worth in superstardom? Or is it again about being an educator and wanting to really help people? I mean, both end would be, you know, is wonderful. But in terms of the culture of media, oftentimes you have to make choices. And, you know, and unfortunately, particularly Black women, right, mm-hmm. are forced into corners and to make choices. And so for me, again, I feel incredibly fortunate to have made a career and can say that I'm a full-time podcaster and like, and feel really good about that because it's what I've always wanted to do. I have always wanted to just be not just a voice, but to be an educator and use different means, whether it's writing, speaking, to connect people with their power and a deeper truth.
Yeah. I was wondering also in that, because I think of my own, you know, journey into doing this work, and my parents as Black immigrants were like, can't you do like law school, or can't you do, can't you like when I literally got my master's in public administration, my dad was like, okay, so when do we go to law school? And I was like, first off, can you just congratulate me on the master's? Are you already planning my next career? And are you paying for this law school? Because have you seen these prices out here? And yeah. And so when I did the political stuff, especially for, you know, someone like him who is a refugee here because politics went awry, I think he was just sort of like, okay. I mean, he watched news, he paid attention. It was still like in his blood to still care a lot about politics, but that was also not what they were thinking I was going to do. So did you ever have that moment with your parents at all? Or were they just like, hey, you know, you do you? And
like, no, I mean, I think that my family knew from a very like young age that I was going to do something that had to do with like public service and wanting to, you know, to be of service and in that way. And so when I went to the Hill and worked for nonprofit organizations and worked inside of movements, that wasn't a shock to them. You know, it was like, do you want to go to law school? Because that seems expensive. You know, and again, like for me, if law school had been free, then I probably would have gone just because I love learning, but I didn't want to practice law. I just wanted to understand how the law was applied in our government, in our society, for whom and how, right? Mm-hmm. Like I just wanted that deeper knowledge and expertise, but I'm like, it wasn't worth the multiple six-figure price tag in order to get it.
Yeah. No, it's that's definitely was it for me too. And I realized, oh, I just want to be an advocate. I want to do advocacy. And I talked to a number of lawyers who were like, you don't need my
they're like, you don't do it. Exactly. And that, you know, and I think that had I had a desire to, let's say, do corporate law, right? Mm-hmm. Or entertainment law that was going to pay back, right? Like quickly, how much money was spent. But I'm just like, so I'm going to run up a six-figure debt in order to do public service, the math is not mathing there. The math is not making sense.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Especially talking about student loan debt. Oh goodness. Well, have you found in your particular journey and kind of the winding path you've taken, but sort of been able to sort of stay as a person who has been able to be an educator throughout it, even though it looks different from being in a classroom, mm-hmm. now doing it through media. Have you found having sort of broken free of like what expectations are of how you should do it in media and what you should be saying? Have you found that you are much happier and you are where you're meant to be now?
I am. And that's such a good question. Again, when I first started out, I think that I was trying to replicate what I thought a media person should look like and sound like. And over the years have really, and I think, you know, through, again, launching my own podcasts and really finding my own voice and rhythm, that then I was able to really now go into different shows and different outlets, like with a sense of just my own truth. And when, you know, when people ask like, hey, Danielle, are you free? Can you come on, you know, such and such a show? And, you know, and you get the topics and all of those things. It's just like, well, do I have something to add here? Right. Like, mm-hmm. what am I going on to really offer and share? And those are the questions that I ask myself before I say yes or no. Before just being asked, I would jump at the opportunity to be on TV and not really, it was just like, I just need to be on so that I can increase my footprint. But in the beginning, it was like, increase your footprint for what exactly, right? And so now I am very happy that I am known as a very bold voice, right? For those that like, that do follow me and know me and see me on TV. I don't curse on TV, but I curse very much on my own shows, which I'm also known for. But I think that I have found my lane, my path, and I feel really good about that.
Yeah. One of the things that I think I've learned is that in this journey, and we've been talking about it a lot as I think women of color across the board, is just this expectation that we've got to be twice as good to get half as far. There was another person who talked about how a Taylor Swift can get away with doing certain things that Beyonce just never could, right? And, you know, I think I even saw, maybe you commented on one of those posts where it's like Jay-Z saying, hey, she's won, my wife has won all the Grammys, like most winningest Grammy person out here. Yeah. Still hasn't won album of the year. The math ain't math it, right? We just had to sort of make a lot of compromises to be who we are, to be accepted, and then it's not good enough, right? And I think when we sort of lean into how you, I think I like to say you have an epitome of like really embracing your voice and who you are, that we kind of get a lot closer to who we are, and we kind of find the success that we're meant to find. And so what do you think are other things that you've learned in your journey to finally, you know what, like, who am I? What's my voice? What am I trying to do? And any advice you'd like to share with folks about
Yeah. And I want to touch on what you said about like Jay-Z and Beyonce, because for whatever opinions people have of Beyonce, mine are incredibly high of her and her music. But I think similarly, you can see the trajectory of artists that have found their lane in terms of, I'm creating art for art's sake. I'm not creating music for an award or for the masses, right? Yeah. Like, there are politics in everything. And I think that Beyonce is a person who, in the beginning, when she was young in Destiny's Child, and when she first came out as a solo artist, she was following the footprints and the paths that other people and entertainers had followed. And then all of a sudden, she found like her own voice and art, mm-hmm. and was just like, I'm above this now, right? Yeah. Like, in so many ways, like, I'm not gonna go begging the academy for this, that, and the other thing. And I think that similarly, when you find what your thing is, it doesn't matter what the outside voices are saying, because there will always be some people that love you, some people that hate you, some people that think that you're brilliant, some people that think that you're an idiot. And so you have to be extraordinarily steadfast in what you think of you and what your offering is, right?
Yeah.
And that offering may change and will change over time as you learn more, as you understand more, as you learn your craft more. And so for me, I think that what I have learned is just that. I used to be devastated by the comments. I used to be devastated by people who didn't, you know, applaud me and think that like this appearance was great or this thing was wonderful. And I said, well, if I am going to be at the sway, right, of other people's opinions and voices, then I'm never going to get anywhere, because I will twist myself in knots trying to convince other people of my value and my worth. And yeah. I think that that comes from age. It comes from experiencing both successes and failures, but really reimagining for yourself, well, actually, was that a failure? Right? Like my first, you know, I'm working on my first book, and it's just like, when you look back now in reflection, and it's just my first attempt at entrepreneurship didn't pan out. Right. Yeah. Like I dipped my toe in it for a couple of years. Then I was just like, it's not going where I want it to go. So I went back inside of a media PR and communications firm and was there for a couple of years. And I'm like, nope, this does not fit. Yes. And then the next, you know, and then the next time that I decided to go out on my own, it's now been 5 years. Yeah. Right. Of working for myself and learning a lot of different things and being able to expand in different ways. But I would have never been able to do that if I had kept listening and contorting myself to the opinions of other people. Right. Yeah. And so for me, the greatest, you know, advice that I can give is get really clear about who you are, what you want to say, how you want to say it. And don't pay attention to the comment section, right? Just like be really steadfast and rooted in what you're offering. And I think that that for me has been, again, I think it's a process of age, the process of having now been in the media policy, politics game for like 15 years at the, you know, at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that point about Beyonce, because I do remember reading something about that too, where she, I think her mom was being interviewed, and she said, honey, I don't, you know, when she was starting to do Lemonade, I don't know if people going to be okay with you leading so hard into the blackness and the culture and all the things. And she's like, mom, like, if I'm not going to be able to like take all of the capital that I've built up and the success to do what I want, then what was it all for? Right. Mm-hmm. And I just remember really being struck by that. And she's sort of like had a couple of very scripted interviews, you know, that are in print. And she sort of alluded to that, right? And it's funny, like when she finally did Lemonade and of course like Renaissance and, you know, both concerts, that's when I became a fan. Like I liked her before, I jammed out to her stuff.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, I'm like now a member of the Bay Hive, because you can just see, like, I think we can feel you're attracted to somebody when you realize they're really in their essence.
Yes.
That's who they are.
Yeah.
And I think that's how she's really gotten to be the superstar that she has. Gone from being a star.
Is when she really began to trust and see herself, right? Yeah. And us being able to kind of watch that maturation, but like, when she began to really fully see herself as like a woman, a Black woman, what does it mean to be a Black woman, to be sexy, to embrace these things, from her Beyonce titled album to Renaissance, like the, I mean, it is just extra. I mean, truly, it's extraordinary.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary to see. And so I do think that, again, you only get that when you get real introspection, when you decide to really unpack like yourself, right? Yeah. And really get into a place of trusting and owning who you are and what you have to say, quieting out everything else and moving forward on your own trajectory and path. And, you know, and that being it, and trusting into the universe and just keeping it moving.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the, why am I here? Why am I doing? What am I doing? And standing very much in that essence, I think is how you be whatever that destiny it is for you. And I've always respected that in you as well. And just, you know, I'm drawn to people who are, okay, I'm just going to go ahead and do this. And even sort of like my mental, like big sis, because I've just like watched you sort of like do all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, Danielle's doing it, I'm going to do it. Because you can see other paths.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, who've just been traditional and done it the like regular way and said things that, you know, I'm like, I know you did not want to say that, but you went ahead and said that because that's the, like, you think that that's the right thing mm-hmm. to say. And then you've shown a path, I think, where you can just be like, no, this is how I feel. This is how I say, add nuance, like, and drop in the swear words and mm-hmm. all of the things, right? And, you know, it's just fun listening to that, truly. So thank you for that. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining. And I also want like folks to know how they can follow you, listen to you, all the things. So.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Thank you for your wonderfully kind words. Folks can follow me on the socials at D2Sense. I'm occasionally on X, not nearly as much as I used to be.
Yeah.
but on very active on Instagram, Danielle Moody, MOODIE _ on TikTok. And yeah, all of that information is at daniellemoody.com. But my pods, Woke AF Daily, Democracy-ish, The New Abnormal, you can get them wherever you get your podcasts.
And I encourage all of you all, for those who are interested in politics and policy and some realness, serve the side of swear words when things are just nonsense, as they often have been lately. Definitely listen to Woke AF or Democracy-ish and even The New Abnormal. So add that to your mix. Well, thank you so much, Danielle. And I definitely will be talking to you soon. I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule for this. So awesome.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of the Embracing Your Voice podcast. If you enjoyed this conversation, please rate and review the podcast wherever you listen. And don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss a future episode. You can also find us at embracingyourvoicepod, all one word, .com. I'm your host, Atima Omara. See you soon.